Welcome to the NBA Thoughts Podcast.
Oh, no. You should know, I was thinking we personally, it's so nice to be back. You know, I thought last week we recorded, it's so nice that we get to record it only a week later.
Only a week's delay between our two episodes. It's a pleasure to speak with you every week.
Just messing with y'all listeners. This is recorded about 2 minutes after the previous episode. Back-to-back episodes. Why not? We're in the zone.
Yeah. So here's some crazy predictions about what has happened since February 21st at 7 p.m. Bitsfish, start us off. What has happened in the past week that our listeners do not know?
What? I'm so confused what you're going for here.
I think it was really unexpected. No, I don't know. I have like a bunch of like very political jokes I want to make. And like, that's not, our podcast isn't about that. Our podcast is just about intersectional feminism and the NBA.
I'm not saying that. You should know, I'm very happy you did the intro, because this year I'm working in a Shana Aleph Yeshiva in Israel. Yeshiva Torah Tanya.
Our listeners who don't know, yeshiva is a term for a place where Jews often study the Talmud, which is the ancient text of Jewish halakha and laws. Continue.
Thank you very much. Perfect explanation. If the actuary stuff doesn't work out, you have a great career in beginner Jewish education. Anyways, so they all freaked out when they found out I have a podcast, and they are super into it, like crazy. You have no idea. It's like 100, like 18-year-old kids who are like way too hyped about everything all the time. Anyway, they always just walk over to me randomly and impersonate our intro from our Sukkot episodes about like MVP talk and whatever. They'll just walk over to me and be like, randomly in the hallway, be like, bum ba da dum bum bum, welcome to, like, just out of nowhere all the time, all day, every day. So they'll be very happy to hear your They also love the bit about the romantically engaged couples across the street from us last time.
Well, they were bound by their love for the NBA Thoughts podcast.
I get comments about that all.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm glad to hear about all of our fans and how happy they are and committed they are. But I would say I'm not surprised in any way, given our ever increasing global popularity. I sometimes have difficulty just, you know, making it onto the subway without just like running away from just hordes of fans, you know, following me everywhere I go. You know, I really get that paparazzi life, you know, just.
It's rough, man, especially in New York, you know, in Jerusalem, I can try to kind of avoid it a bit, but like I'm surprised you survive.
Yeah. I might have to like live a secluded life. You know, it's just too difficult with the fame.
Rough, man. Freaking rough.
It is rough. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, Bitsfish, right. We're back. We're talking about the NBA, because what else? What could be better? What could be more important? What could be more special? So what do you want to talk about this week?
What do I want to talk about this week? I don't know. You said you had some fire predictions. I really want to hear them now.
Fire predictions. Okay, so let's go with like just like sweet out.
Give me some Skip Bayless level predictions, please.
Skip Bayless level predictions. I feel like I'm like, you know, Ethan Strauss. He has like his Radio Ethan thing.
So no, I feel like I don't know what that is.
Ethan Strauss, he's like a writer. He writes for the Warriors. Kevin Durant apparently has never met him, though he's writing a book about the Warriors. So that's a little strange. But like, so he has like his like regular like nuanced ideas, and then he goes into Radio Ethan, where he does like, he impersonates like sports radio personalities who are basically Skip Bayless, and he just like gives the hottest takes. So like some radio hot takes. LeBron is bad at basketball, and the Lakers are going to miss the playoffs because of how bad he is at basketball. Hot take.
I'm liking that.
You're liking what?
I'm liking that.
Like, if he was better, like Kobe Bryant, if you remember, when he was age 36, he had a similar situation. The 2012 not age 36, age 34, I think. 2012 Lakers were like on the verge. They had the same record, 28-29.
Okay.
On the missing the playoffs. Kobe Bryant dragged them to the playoffs. And if you remember what happened the next 4 years, you remember the Lakers also had the worst years of their franchise history afterwards. So, like, that's what LeBron should be aiming for, you know?
Are you LeBron tears his Achilles?
Sorry, one second. You were a little fuzzy there.
Are you predicting a LeBron?
No, I'm actually expecting, because I think LeBron is smarter than that, and I'm expecting LeBron. He seems to be saying he won't, but I'm expecting him to sort of throw the towel in and just call it a day on this season.
No.
I think they're going to miss the playoffs. I don't know. I think, they're definitely not. It's not impossible, but, if I was LeBron, I would look around and I would say, yeah, I could push myself, but I'm injured still. This team isn't good. Why push myself to make the playoffs? Rest, give my body some time off, come back next season healthier. I think it's a big waste. I would be really worried about him playing all out for 40 games when he's still recovering a little bit from that injury.
Interesting. What do you mean by 40 games?
And then the playoffs, for him to really play all out, would be a big issue. So I'm not sure he has it in him. An idea to do.
And you're saying in terms of long-term, whatever.
If LeBron could play 31 minutes a night at 80% energy and get them to the playoffs, fine. That's not an issue. He's not going to injure himself. But for LeBron to drag them to the playoffs, they really need to play elite basketball for the rest of the season, which means he needs to be giving 90% for 35 minutes every game. And I just think for him to do that off of this injury just seems very dangerous and could lead to a very serious injury. And I don't think that's a good plan. And I would assume LeBron is very smart, always been very good about taking care of his own body. And I think they're going to come up short of the playoffs just because I don't think he's going to push himself that hard, because I think he knows how hard to push himself when he needs to and when he doesn't need to. And I would assume he's been saying this all year, that this isn't the year. He knows he's not winning the finals this year. He knows it's a process. So I'd be very surprised to see him push his body 110% on a team that I think he knows is not making it out of the first round and definitely not out of the second round.
I'm just if I'm LeBron, what motivates me anymore?
Legacy. For him to win another title, in LA.
How many seasons does he have left?
He's 34.
How old is he?
Given that before he went down with that injury, he was still playing at an MVP level, he probably has 4 seasons left. Maybe more.
What could he do now at this point in his career that, is, cool? One championship? Is that that do for him?
So. Winning another championship. With the franchise, with the Lakers in LA. Also just continuing to show how good he is at this late of an age. To win a finals MVP at age 37 or something would be pretty impressive. Yeah.
That is cool. I'm just thinking to myself, this season, what motivates me when I know I'm not making the finals? I don't know, which gets into the question, if I'm not winning a championship, what motivates me ever?
Luckily for us, Fitzfish, you're winning championships every day over there in Traga, so it's not an issue. As Damian Lillard would say, you are winning in life, and that's what matters.
Well, you see, there's one extremely important topic that's dear to your heart that we haven't addressed yet, and that's Paul George. I'm curious if anything to say about that.
Paul George is definitely probably, I would say, one of the most unexpected parts of this season. I would say most other players in the MVP discussion or teams sort of ascending, there are not a lot of other top 10 players who I think last year we weren't sure if they were top 15. Most of the top 10 players this year were top 10 or borderline top 10 players last year. And I think Paul George, at least from an RPM perspective, which is just one way of looking at it, but last year he had an RPM of 2, and this year he's at 8, leading the league, which is a pretty incredible and unprecedented jump. I think, of just like an incredible increase in value. And it's just, it's been amazing to watch him this season. He's just so good, can hit any shot at any angle, just knocking everything down, locked in defensively. Like, he's just been absolutely incredible carrying this Thunder team to really being an incredibly successful team out West and really starting to appear like they might be, you know, an interesting challenge for the Warriors. I wouldn't say like they're going to beat them, but you know, Mike, I would watch that series.
Like, what? Like, they're not having that good of a year. They're at like 50. They're on pace for like 53.
It's not,
wins.
But like, that's pretty that good. Great. Like 53 wins. Like, they could be second place in the West. Like, it's an incredible season, but it is a good season.
This Paul George, better or
that's
worse than like
exactly
Durant
what others have been talking
world.
About it. Like, he really looks like peak Durant, but I would say also peak Durant never really played as well alongside Westbrook as we're seeing now. Like, I think if you really think about peak Durant was probably that year that Westbrook was injured, was probably that year that Durant won MVP when Westbrook was out. And then 2015, 2016, their last year together, we saw it a little bit, but I think I would argue that George is better than Durant ever was playing with Westbrook. And I think they've just, part of that is Westbrook's own way of playing better off the ball and playing more off the ball. And I think a lot of it is also just their chemistry seems to be better. There's just a lot more. I feel like that Westbrook and Durant team was, they were just both so good at just my turn, your turn. And OKC now seems to be a little more Westbrook and George operating in tandem. And I think you take into account George's defensive abilities, and I think it might be better.
So why can't they, what's stopping them from being like contenders? Like, why aren't they contenders in the same way?
Because Westbrook is having the worst season of his career. Like, that's probably it. Like,
that is a good answer.
If Westbrook can start to figure things out, I think they could be as good as those teams. Another problem is the Warriors are better than that team was. Like, I don't know if the 2015-16 Thunder can beat the current Warriors. You got to remember those Warriors didn't have Durant. So, like, adding Durant just makes the Warriors so much more invincible. But I think the biggest factor probably is Westbrook has still been really good, but he's just has his shot is off from pretty much every area on the court. He's not as bad from the rim, but he's really struggling anywhere outside the paint. He's struggling from the free throw line. He's struggling more than usual from the three-point line. So I think if he can magically figure some of those things out, which I didn't watch the All-Star game, but I think he was like 1 for 8 from three in that game. So like, I don't think there's a lot of indications that he will figure those things out, but I think that's probably standing between the Thunder and being a championship-level contender is Russell Westbrook being a more remembering how to shoot.
Do you think? Yeah, two things about Russ. I want to shout out some Russell Westbrook appreciation, which I think you're going to – I think you
appreciate
like
Russ.
He's your favorite player.
All those things I said, still my favorite player.
You know, we're talking about like Dame Lillard just having been really good for a long time. Russell Westbrook has been like a stick player for like the last 8 years. Like, and like, honestly, I'm like, he's definitely a Hall of Famer right now, right? Like, I'm saying, like, just solidly, he's been a top 10 player in the league for like, I don't know, at least like
probably
5 years,
maybe more.
Maybe, probably more.
He is really, really good. And I think this year shows how good he's been, because if you looked at like, I don't know exactly what the formulas are, but if you looked at basically expected wins provided by shots alone, Westbrook is the highest volume, lowest efficiency scorer in the league by like an incredibly big margin of he's shooting.
He's still good.
And I think that just shows how much value he provides elsewhere.
He's still an all-star.
And why it's so important for the Thunder to have him, and why it's not like, I'm not saying if Westbrook would shoot less, they'd be better, because that's not the answer. The Thunder need Westbrook to put pressure on the rim, to open up the rest of their game, to find passes for Steven Adams, to find passes for everyone else. Like, the Thunder get going because Westbrook gets the ball in transition. Westbrook runs the pick and roll, his head's down, and like, you just can't stop him. But he's giving back a lot of that value by missing a lot of those shots. He still needs to be taking them because that's how their offense works. That's how he creates that value. But if he can improve back to his league average efficiency, which is what he's usually been for a lot of his career, or a little bit below league average efficiency, but right around there, then all of the value he's providing by creating shots for others, creating easy offensive rebounds, easy assists, all of a sudden skyrockets, and they're a really elite team.
So as someone who watches lots of Thunderball, is this Russell Westbrook bad shooting because of a waning athleticism? He no longer has his legs under him. He just can't get the shots up.
That's an interesting question. I don't really know. And I think a lot of them are like related and connected in different ways. I heard a Royce Young theory that he thinks Russell Westbrook's been struggling for free
time. Ooh, Royce Young. One second. I'm liking this shout out. Feel like he's never been shouted out on our podcast. And he's like, a solid insider, like, and like a
special. I really like Royce Young. Did you see he tweeted out Ben Taylor's video about Russell Westbrook? Yeah. So everything I say is Biffne Moreno, Ben Taylor. Royce Young, he's a good guy, but I would not categorize him as like my Moreno. He is a rabbi, but he's not my specific rabbi.
How much longer till Ben? Sorry, I'm going on a tangent. How much longer till Ben Taylor gets mainstream? Like, he's gonna get recognized eventually. He is so good. I'm blown away. I love you, Ben Taylor.
Hashtag sponsored. Comment on it. Watch Ben Taylor's videos about players this season: Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, Russell Westbrook, others. His videos were a lot of the inspiration for my rookie idea that you guys may remember from a week ago in your time, from my rookie video about the rookie wall, but. No. So Royce Young was saying that part of his free throw shooting has been messed up the last 2 years because he used to walk to half court. So his rhythm is off because he's no longer allowed to walk to half court because of like the pace of play rules. So that's like messed with his rhythm, which has messed with his free throw shooting. And he thinks that may have messed with the rest of his shooting. So I don't know if it's that. I don't know if it's just like, if it's what you were saying, like his legs not being under him. Because he definitely did have a bunch of, he had a knee procedure before the season started. And then I think he had an ankle issue also early in the season. So it could be that he just never got his legs under him correctly. Maybe now the All-Star break, maybe he'll get those under him. I doubt it, but I don't really know what it is. But like some of his shots that he's never been an efficient shooter, but some of his shots that would go in with some regularity, he's really missing. And I just don't know. I don't know what it is.
I just think that one of the most underly asked questions this year then is like, are we seeing like a decline? Like Russ is like 30. We thought he's had lots of like injuries in his career, and we've been astounded at, like, in contrast to, let's say, Derrick Rose, he's never been affected by anything. And I don't know, like maybe, I don't know, like, is this the end of like the all NBA, perennial all NBA player? Like 7-time all NBA. Wow.
It is a good question. I think there is concern, though I would say what's different about him and Derrick Rose is his athleticism really disappeared. Like he couldn't get to the rim in the same way. He wasn't as quick in transition. Yeah. He didn't get as much rise and things like that. Westbrook, that hasn't seemed to have been an issue really. Like I think maybe this first game or two back, he was a little bit off, but like it seems like he still can jump just as high. He still gets to the rim. He still attacks the rim. It's just like his shot is a little bit off, which I think is something I'd be a little bit less concerned about for long-term sort of aging. Like I think that's usually something, I don't know what it is. It could just be a long cold streak. It could be he never got his legs under him to start the season. Something like Paul George we saw last season just took him time to get back to the level we thought he was. Not that Westbrook has like a similar injury, but like it could just be like he missed training camp and never really got his body right. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm a little concerned, but I'm not very concerned.
If you think about it right now, fun question. Of players who are still at peak level or close to peak level, like how many are of similar legend career legend status as Russ. So basically, with the caveat, I'm like excluding Dirk and Wade. You know, like I got a list of five.
I'm thinking like LeBron, Curry, Durant. Probably.
Yeah. And only one of them. And Harden. Yeah.
Like right? I would say, like a lot of the other, like Anthony Davis, Giannis, Embiid. Those are sort of the next crew. That's like the next age of those top five guys. And then Kawhi, who's sometimes mentioned on that list of like being a current top 10 player, doesn't really have as many top 10 years. Like I think Kawhi top five.
Yeah, Kawhi needs like two to three more years of like.
Yeah, like I think Kawhi at this point probably only has 2 years of top five status, really.
Yeah. So it's just like crazy. Yeah, and he's literally all NBA only twice. And so it's just like crazy to like firstly note that three of those guys played for the Thunder at one point. Three of the top five legends in the NBA right now that are relevant. And then just like, I don't know, Russ is a really significant player in the league.
Yeah. And we may be watching his downfall happen. I don't know. I hope not. But this is his worst year probably in the last five. Like there was that one season he was injured, so I'm not counting that one. But other than like his injury season, this might be his worst season since like 2011 or something.
I think, and also as woke as we are, and as like above caring about triple doubles as we are, and how arbitrary we know they are, like 3 years ago, if you told me someone averaged a triple-double, like, I didn't understand how Oscar Robertson did it. Like, I didn't understand how that was possible.
Yeah, I'm with you. I also think, while we're doing hot takes today, all those NBA commentators who are like, no, James Harden doing it wrong, because he went and he tried to get 30 points, and that makes it inorganic, and it makes it dumb. A, shut up, nobody cares. And B, like, why are we – like, it's fun. James Harden 30-point streak is fun. Like, it's fun, and I'm happy to see him try and do it. And I'm happy to see him try and extend it a little more. And I'm happy to see him put more effort into making sure that it happens. And I'm happy when it keeps going and that we can do more games and keep this streak and keep seeing what he can do. And I'm happy to see the same thing with Westbrook. And at the end of the day, it's still impressive because if it was so easy to score 30 points in 40 straight games – somebody else would have done it at any point. Harden's not the first one who tried to score points. You know what most people on the court are trying to do at all points? They're trying to score baskets. And James Harden's good at it. Like, let's not critique him for doing these things.
My NBA wish list, please give me, like, a ball-dominant Steph Curry before he's out of his prime. Like, give me – I want a season where he can have – Harden usage rate. I can't imagine. Like, I think it'd be.
Yeah.
He's so freaking good. He's averaging like 8% better.
His true shooting percentage is like leaps and bounds better than anyone else in the league, in terms of somebody like a volume shooter like he is. Like, he can score anytime, anything, always so well. He is unbelievable.
I shared to the to our NBA chat group about like, ooh, you know, if we were really legit, we would call it like a stack group, and we would have it on the stack app, like
are you from the stack?
A stack or something. Slack, classic. I'm like that. I'm that old man who's like so out of, who's like so not with it.
Slack is like cool. It's like a company thing. Like that's like cool hip companies use Slack. Like I was disappointed that my company doesn't use Slack, but I work for like a big insurance company, so they don't use like cool fancy Slack. They use like Skype.
Yeah, so like the NBA thought Clever like needs to change to like a Slack. So like
Slack is like it's the woke WhatsApp, I would say, for like business. It's like the woke business WhatsApp. Like woke business. That's what they do. Like I think Times has a Slack. Super. The Wilf Housing Department uses Slack. The Ringer uses Slack. Like that's their deal. Wait, the Wilf Housing Department?
The first one you just mentioned?
The New York Times?
No, the before that. Oh yeah, I just like I like how that's the trio. Like
two like big legit companies and why use those men's camping
companies in the world right now. Green Room.
Pardon? the two most powerful men in the world. I like that. Like David Brooks, Bill Simmons, and Jonathan Schwab.
Can I ask an important question? Do you think David Brooks is in charge of the New York Times?
No, but it's the I'm gonna show my ignorance. It's the only like journalist or editor I can think of off the top of my head. And, like, I was really committed to the joke already.
Publisher of the New York Times, which would be the equivalent of Jonathan Schwab and Bill Simmons. But I'm glad, like, in case our listeners didn't know where you stood, so now they all think you're a conservative for your support for David Brooks.
Oh, I'm not anything. Oh, I did start reading. I did start listening to the Whatchamacallit recently.
The
Daily. It's called The Daily. Yeah.
I would say our podcast is a little more professional than they are, but I appreciate a little bit of their, they're a little more off the cuff than us, you know?
So I was actually going to say the opposite. I really think that like their forced, like really rigid form is like, it feels like, whoa, I know what you're doing. Like, also, get over like this form.
Michael Barbaro is like, always asking questions that I know he knows the answer to. You don't know how the Senate works?
Listen, I ask questions. I literally don't know. I'm making this up as I go along, so I'm asking you because you actually know about the NBA and I don't.
That's like some things like he does get. Like sometimes he asks other journalists and like they genuinely know things he doesn't. But other times he's like, you're saying Watergate was a scandal that happened with, am I getting this name right, Nixon? Is that what you are telling me? Tell me more about this scandal. It happened in...
And at some points, like, okay, being self-referential is, like, somewhat, like, is sometimes, like, kind of cool and, like, meta and people like that. But, like, I feel like when he does it and, like, he references the script, he just has to do it because, like, it's so freaking obvious because, like, they're super unnatural. Yeah. Anyways, one other random non-NBA point before we stop being Mevatel NBA time, because it's much more important than these things, is a huge, 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 like, mind-blowing fact. So, like, now that, like, so, like, us as modern Orthodox Jews, like, have very much grown up and lived our whole lives like a super bubble. But as you're doing, but I'm not doing, some of us and our friends have like left like professional environment where we're exposed to this interesting exotic concept called goys, otherwise known as 99.99% of the world that aren't Jews. But apparently my friends who are like in law school and like working tell me that like people who aren't Jewish like don't know what WhatsApp is like in America, that it's like, it's like it's an app, like only it's super popular, like internationally out of America and with Jews in America. But like your average American, like isn't into WhatsApp, doesn't have it. That blew my mind. I don't know if it's true, but that's what they told me.
My team, my specific, the group of people that I work with at my office happen to be a lot of international people. One's from Australia, one's from India, one's from England. So I think they use WhatsApp, but I think globally speaking, or I guess not globally, nationally speaking, you are correct that I think a lot of non-Jewish Americans do not use WhatsApp in the same way we do, which is interesting. I found there's a bunch of weird differences with kosher food that I've been hearing about. Apparently, it's not a thing to have fries with pizza at non-kosher restaurants. Fries with pizza.
Having what?
I think
having
that's
what?
Like a kosher thing.
I always thought that was weird. I never had that growing up. So
sorry to our sponsors, hashtag French fries, but I will not eat those things.
Okay. I want to talk about the biggest story in the NBA this year.
Sacramento. That's
the Sacramento.
I think going into the season, that's who everyone was talking about, and that's who everyone was thinking would be the number one season, would be the number one storyline. So I think it's not a surprise to hear you talking about it. For listeners who did not understand my sarcasm, going into the regular season, everyone wrote off the Kings and assumed they would get 21 wins. they have 30 wins already, and they have 20 games left to play. So they have been a shocking team this year.
I'd even say more than that. I would say, like, if in the West, they were literally the only team we were willing to write off, like, easily. Right. If you listen to my super ambivalence in our Western Conference podcast, like, even the Suns, I was like, oh, they're going for it this year. They're signing Trevor Ariza. Yeah. They're signing veterans. No, they want to win.
Like, immediately, like, okay, there's the Kings, and then there's the 14 other teams. And now, all of a sudden, the Kings are in ninth place, a game out of the Western Conference playoffs.
Like, what do we do with this? Like,
I would say the number one thing I want to talk about them is they've done something that I was confused why NBA teams haven't done before. Because I've seen a lot of sports movies. Have you seen a lot of sports movies? You've seen sports movies, no? Like Coach Carter, Miracle?
I'll go with you on this one.
Fitz?
I've seen some.
Okay, well, I've seen those movies. And the basic plot of both of those movies is the coaches are like, you guys aren't good. But if we run a lot, we will run more than them. They will get tired, and we will be better. And I was always confused why no NBA teams ever tried that strategy. And now this year, the Sacramento Kings are really doing that strategy. Like, that's what they do. They run more than any other team in the league. And if you look at their first half point differential, it's negative by a good margin. But if you look at their third and fourth quarter point differentials, they are significantly more positive.
Oh, wow.
It's on NBA.com. You can search for a point margin by quarter and by half. Yeah, teams just get tired.
That's amazing.
Shape as the king.
Well, like, isn't that kind of like, but that, I mean, that's kind of like what those 13 Nuggets did, no?
I think, or
like,
so. Whatever that Nuggets like, team. I'm surprised more teams don't do this more often. I'm just like, if we just run more than the other teams, they will get tired and we will be better. Like Coach Carter did. Why aren't you guys doing it? Do you think they haven't seen Coach Carter? Hmm. Should I send NBA coaches the link to the Coach Carter movie for how to find it on Google?
Yo, I think you'd get
it. My coaching philosophy will be exclusively based on things that I've seen in sports movies and sports TV shows. And I'm going to advocate for a lot of Friday Night Lights activities. So it'll be a lot of yelling, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. And then you magically win on the last play. That seems to be like a fail-proof strategy.
Okay. Random stats that came up in terms of in researching the Kings. Three-point shooters are surprisingly high in the fast break points rankings. Like Klay Thompson is like up there in terms of most fast break points in the league.
Ooh, that is interesting. I think that's because a lot of teams do like that move in transition, find the guy for the open three, and give him an open three.
I guess so. Like,
Klay, I don't think Klay's so. Not so I think that's probably like they push the ball, they get somebody else running down the lane, so somebody has to protect the rim, and it's a lot easier to protect the rim than to try to protect all corners.
Yeah, exactly. So in terms of when you're talking about the king. So last year, they finished last in possessions per game. So this year they're second. So like that's like a huge difference. Last year they averaged 95.6 possessions a game.
That is a
this year they're up to 104.1. So like literally from end to end. Last year, George Hill and Zach Randolph playing heavy minutes. So like they're not doing much.
That's true. Way different. Yeah, they've been really good, and I think that's also played to a lot of their strengths. Like De'Aaron Fox looks, he has a lot of that Westbrook just like speed, ability to go to the rim, really work in transition, find the open man, which has really worked out well for them. Combine that with their excellent 3-point shooting, led by Buddy Hield, but also by their Bojan Bogdanovic.
The one that's
one's on the Pacers, one's on the King. They're both good, and they're both like the same age, and it's really confusing.
Yeah, the one on the Pacers. Oh, I love the Pacers. Okay, different time. Like, they're still
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I don't. They seem
Oladipo, right?
But they've been like, good all season without Oladipo. Like, Oladipo has never really this season never really was at the level he was at last year. And they've been good, sort of. I don't know, like, I don't want to say like in spite of him, but like they've been really good regardless of his play this year. Like, he was out for 10 games and they were fine, and now he's out for the season and they seem to still be chugging right along. Like, just Miles Turner has become a defensive stopper. Bogdanovich, both Bogdanoviches are just killing it this season. And Sabonis can't miss a shot. Like, they're playing well. I think the Pacers also, I have to double check this, I believe their bench unit is like the Raptors bench unit of last year levels of like incredible efficiency, incredible net rating also. They're one of the best lineups in the league. So I think that's something that'll be very bad for them in the playoffs. But if they can ride that to a number three seed, they're really going to mess over the Celtics and the Sixers.
Well, goodness, like, everyone talks about the East, and everyone talks about it as like, wow, we're in line for like the most crazy second round ever. But like, watch out for the Nets and Pacers playing spoiler. Like, what if like I don't know, like
yeah.
Right now the Nets are in sixth. So, and right now the Celtics Sixers are 4-5. Like, also, what if the Pacers or Nets beat one of the big four teams? Like, I don't know. Like, the Nets are like they're pesky. I don't know. Joel Embiid. Oh my gosh, if he's injured, wow, that ruins everything. Yeah. You know, like,
I would say I would have
fun stuff.
If there was a team that was going to be spoiled in the first round, I would predict the Sixers. Like, if somebody was going to lose to the Pacers or Nets, my money would be on the Sixers. I just think they're more unproven. They have a lot more things going on. As opposed to the Celtics, not that I would say they're better, but I think they're sort of a more stable team. So I would be surprised to see the Celtics lose to a team like the Nets. But on the other hand, like, if the Pacers make the number three seed and it's 4-5 Celtics against Sixers, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. That would be a fun first round, though.
That would be fun first round. Oh, Pacers Nets would be great.
Yeah, that would be fun.
The two pesky teams. Yeah,
they are pesky. The Celtics and Sixers just have too much star power compared to either of those teams that I'd expect them to lose.
Yeah. So regarding the fasting, it's actually interesting. I saw that basically what the way the running thing works is that like you watch them play, and literally as soon as someone gets the ball, what you have is the guy farthest from the rim literally runs like the cherry pick even before the team gets possession, really. And that's something they can do because like these days no one offensive rebounds anymore. And then also the next two players are what they call wing runners. And they just literally sprint down the court on each side. And like what this does is it's not necessarily like that, like the outlet passes to one of these guys and they're just open, but like it just like creates too many men there for the amount of people back, and like it creates all sorts of stuff. Another thing I saw is that the Kings, what they do is that they very much don't care to get it to the point guard that started going. Like, they don't need to get it to Fox. Like, oftentimes Fox is a wing runner, because they just want to get it out as quickly as possible, and that messes with things. Why? Because it also messes with the matchup, because it's a different person each time playing each role. Like, it's not like they have to coordinate. It's not just like, okay, we need to get the guy guarding Fox on the guy leading the break. Sometimes it's the wing, you know, and sometimes you need the big man defending the guy leading the break. It's very hard for teams to get to get enough guys back in time, and B, to get the matchup. Those are excellent points.
I agree with you. That's I think always the problem in transition. Of transition, it's always tough to find your matchup. So definitely anything you can do to add to that confusion just gives you an advantage. And that's why transition is always head and shoulders efficiency wise better than any other play. just like the most efficient offensive plays come in transition, just because you often have a numbers advantage. The defense isn't set. The defense isn't ready. So the more you can get out in transition, the more you can run in transition, take advantage of that, the better set up you are to score efficiently.
Like, it's funny because transition is like a huge part of a lot of teams. Like the Sixers rely on transition a lot. Like Ben Simmons' primary offensive values in transition. The Warriors, like
the Thunder also,
are a huge
play a lot in transition. Helped by Westbrook. That's like the whole deal with like, oh, Westbrook's stealing all these defensive rebounds. But like Westbrook gets that defensive rebound, it's instant transition just because of how good, how quick he is, how good of a passer he is. He can just attack at any point. Like that's just getting out in transition more than the other team is just a huge advantage for you. Yeah. But like, do you have faith in the Kings? Do you think they're going to squeeze it out? Are they going to make the playoffs?
So here's the thing. They look good now. Like right now, I mean, just like you look at the standings, they're three games over 500. The Clippers are two games ahead of them in the win column. They're tied in the loss column. And the Clippers are like seemingly worse because they lost to the Ice Harris. And the Lakers, like whatever, they're a couple games behind. Obviously, like LeBron's coming back, he could improve. Here's the thing, the Kings, their point differential is not that impressive. They're 18th on offense, 18th on defense, and 22nd total. They're 18th ranked offense, 18th ranked defense, and 22nd ranked like overall point differential. That's like not an eighth seed in the West, and like I don't know. It's like I'm not, you know, like
yeah. I don't know if they have it to close out the season.
I just don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know how good of a team they are. Basically, like they don't really have that many good players. Like they're just like I don't know, but like how. They're just like solid-ish, like playing with like a good strategy. Eventually, that crumbles. That's not like something I believe.
But I would say at this point in the season, like being good, we're 56 games in. I don't know if we're like, oh, it's going to crumble. It's not going to hold up here in these last 20 games. Like if they've made it 2/3, I don't know if I would say it's going to crumble. And I would say some of those things, their point differential might be lower just because they play a lot of possessions. So their point differential might be a little worse than it seems. And I'm curious also if their strategy of sort of tiring teams out and making a fourth quarter comeback might be what sort of allows them to have a higher win total than predicted by their point differential. Because if it's a close game, they can come back and win in the fourth quarter, as opposed to if it's a blowout, it'll sort of, they're doomed.
I hear. I guess I just don't have a lot of faith in them. As like, I mean, this is like if they make the playoffs, that's a huge accomplishment. It's a monumental accomplishment. And so what I'm saying isn't really revolutionary. I think that obviously, and especially if they're the eighth seed, they're gonna get rocked. Like I think, like they're a much less dangerous seventh seed.
Definitely, LeBron is definitely the most dangerous of all those bubble teams. The Clippers, the Kings, I would put the Spurs in that category, and the Lakers, like. There's no debate that LeBron would be the most fun to watch in a playoff series and would be the most dangerous in a playoff series, just because we know LeBron can reach a whole nother level that no other team really can. I don't know. So
yeah, exactly. I'm not sure if we spoke about this last episode or this episode, but like that whole like what motivates LeBron. Like, I wonder if it kind of motivates LeBron to, like, be like, yo, I can make the playoffs in the seventh seed and make the conference finals. Because, like,
That's an interesting question, but I still, like, I don't know. As much as, like, I have faith in LeBron and I think he's really good, I still don't expect it. Like, I just think this Lakers team has too many flaws that I think will be easily exploited in a playoff series. That as much as I think will be a better seventh seed than most of those other teams, I would be very shocked to see LeBron win a playoff series this year, no matter what seed he comes in, no matter who he's playing. I'd be very surprised, and I would bet against him winning a playoff series.
You bet against
him. Yeah. I know, like, everyone's like, oh, who's he scared of on the Nuggets? Like, I don't care who he's scared of or not. He's a worse team than they are. No, like, it doesn't matter. No. Like, it doesn't matter if you're scared of the Bear or not. The Bear will still eat you. It doesn't matter to the Bear whether you're scared or not. It matters that the Bear is stronger and has bigger teeth.
I'm not sure if I'd bet against him. I just, like, I can't bring myself to bet against LeBron.
I know. We've had this discussion before.
Last year. No, on the record, I think I said on the record that if LeBron was, that my preseason favorite, like, after the playoffs, my preseason favorite for this coming year was the Celtics. Even if LeBron was in the East, I said that, like, coming out of the East. So, like, I was ready. Last year, I was not willing to bet against LeBron. I was ready for this year, which it's kind of tragic that, like, that now these teams
would say, don't have a chance at him. It's not that I don't have any – it's not that I don't have faith in LeBron. I just think, like, this team is so bad. I think LeBron is still – playoff LeBron might still be the best playoff player in the NBA, but that doesn't change the fact that he is in the worst situation of his career in terms of – Bitsfish, are you back with us?
We're back.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for our listeners. Our recording seemed to have cut out. For those who are missing the conversation, Bits, did you ever listen to that Brian Windhorst about?
No, which?
Oh, it's like Brian Windhorst's podcast. It's not that good. I think he's pretty good.
Oh,
I think
that one.
Good. I actually think Andrew Hahn, who's like the producer, I'm more interested in listening to him, and he's not allowed to talk enough, but, like, whatever. They have this shtick where for all their ads, they, like, do, like, this, like, fake story, like, pretend Windhorst is going to, like, give some juicy gossip. It was funny the first time, and now they just kind of do it every time, and their shtick is getting pretty old. This was a long-winded way of me saying that at one point, like, 2 weeks ago, I was listening to, like, 6 or 7 NBA podcasts a week of, like, different podcasts.
Oh, wow.
And I cut to, like, 2, and I think they're all dumb. And I'm like, they're all of them. They don't.
I want to say,
everyone who's not me is. It's a tough struggle.
The great Zach Lowe started the year really slow and bad. I think he's gotten better. I don't know if he's going to return to peak performance anymore. But yeah, which I think raises an interesting question.
Yes, and Zach Lowe is really good.
What?
But I think Zach Lowe is still definitely one of the better podcasts. But other than that, like, I was listening to the starters for a while. They got old and dumb. The Jump got old and dumb. Windhorst got old and dumb. I was listening to this thing, the Daily Day. Like, they're all old and dumb. And I have commutes. Like, I have podcast time to kill. But I think now I'm just going to read just because, like,
wow. What's dumb, reading, you know? Man?
I know. I'm an old person. I get the New York Times and I take the magazine, like, the paper one. People are like, you know, you have it on your phone. I was like, yeah. But I want to pretend I'm living in the 70s. You know, be one of those woke hipsters who still reads paper.
You read the New York Times from a paper?
Yeah. Not most of it. Just the magazine. Like, I get the rest of it, but I don't really read the rest of it.
Okay, I'm going to show how uncultured I am again right now. What do you mean the magazine?
In their weekend issue, they have a magazine. I don't know. It's like, you know, magazines? It's like one of those.
Let's pretend I know what a magazine is.
Imagine if there were like 60 pages of, like, not regular paper, kind of glossy paper. You put a cover on it, you printed it, you stapled it together, and then people
got it.
So it's like that.
Nice.
Some of their articles are pretty good. Some of their articles are also boring, but they're a lot smarter than a lot of the NBA boring people. It turns out it might not be that all NBA commentators are as smart as all other commentators. It seems that's like my impression.
I feel like there's dumb non-NBA commentators also.
Yeah, but not writing for the New York Times magazine.
Ooh, I hear that. But that's weird because New York Times is really popular, right?
It is pretty popular, yeah.
But, like, I accept as almost like an axiom in my life that there aren't that many smart people in the world, and most people are stupid. So, like, how would there be quality people who want to read? Like, how would something mainstream be quality ever?
Wow. So deep. You know, Zach Lowe is the most popular podcast, right?
I honestly, I don't know. I think the more he's mainstream, the worse he gets.
The worse he gets. That's true. I agree with your point. I think there are definitely segments and things the New York Times does that I'm like, you're appealing too much to popularity. And there are definitely issues and flaws that it encounters when it tries to do that. And I think that's why I think the greatest success of our podcast has been to excel beyond those popularity, that despite our incredible popularity, we haven't given in to the demands of the people, and we're still producing the greatest content.
I thought, you know? That, like, I thought you were about to use this to explain why you didn't want to go Facebook Live, because you're worried if we went Facebook Live, we'd get like 30,000 views, and like you'd be worried it would affect the purity of our content.
And that like, is that is concern, but I think also our listeners are really dedicated to the podcast form, and I don't think they're interested in Facebook Live. Also, Facebook kills your data and is an evil corporation, as opposed to podcasts, which are hosted on all sorts of, I'm sure, completely upstanding data startup technologies that have never stolen any of our data.
I was going to say that like it's almost like the ideal to me is it would be if like no one watches our podcast,
because like we are very close to that ideal. If that helps.
Yeah, I think our recent episode got 150 hits. I don't know if that's a lot or not, but like, I don't know.
That's good.
I think that like if I get the Shrig Gangsters to like in the proper like telling them about it in the proper way, I think I could probably get this like viral on like the Shana Olive scene. I have to think a little bit, but, like I think with a little bit of thinking.
What's gonna happen when they hear you saying that you manipulated this like that?
Yeah, they love it. They'll love the shout out. And I love how meta this is, you know?
The most meta.
Okay.
Well, anyway. Meta is what's popular nowadays.
What do you say?
Meta is what's popular nowadays.
Yeah. When I was preparing for some Kings talk.
Lakers.
What do you say?
This was a long-winded segue of saying we were in the middle of talking about the Lakers and we got cut off.
Ooh, I want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
I was preparing for the Kings talk, watching some videos at my sister's, and my my 4-year-old nephew, like whatever, anytime there's like a video playing, they get really excited. So he jumps on to like watch with me. And like, I'm just like, oh, this is like wants to watch some random videos. I'm like, come on, I gotta watch this NBA stuff, prepare for the podcast. He's not so happy, but he accepts. He accepts.
Fair.
He's watching NBA. He's watching NBA highlights with me. And it brought me so much joy that the instinct of NBA analysis runs in the family. How do I know? Because we're watching and he points at like one guy and like he's like, that guy's not doing anything or whatever. Like he's a 4-year-old, so he doesn't talk nearly that like developed. But he's like, whatever, he says something along those lines. And then so like whatever, it's like it's a quick highlight kind of clip. So I have to like rewind and he points at the guy again. And the guy he was pointing at was the ref. So the insight was correct. He did spot one dude on the floor who just like wasn't involved in the action as much. And I thought that's like really clever, like for like a 4-year-old to like be able to notice that.
The ref is not, he seems to be not want to get the ball.
Yeah, like I don't know, like that's a 4-year-old, like who doesn't know like that you have two teams that each wear the same colors, and he just is able to spot based on the movement of the player. I was very impressed by that.
That is very impressive and a good sign for an aspiring young NBA prodigy. I would say, did you read they had this whole article ESPN had about the Tim Donaghy scandal from last week?
I didn't read it. I saw it, though.
Okay, because that's one ref who was very involved in the game. Some would say he was too involved in the game.
Okay. Okay. So I want to get back to the Kings. So we're like, okay, like maybe they make the playoffs, maybe they don't. They're like they have this good like running strategy. Another thing I want to point out, same thing with the Bucks, and I wasn't able to analyze this enough. Like also just like we like pretend forgetting about the defense. Because just like they went from 28th to 18th on offense, they also went 28th to 18th on defense. So like there's half the story that we are not understanding.
That is an excellent point. I'm curious if that's related to what we were talking about before of defense just being, I don't know. I feel like we should look into this of is defense, how strongly is defense correlated with just overall success and which one leads to the other of our teams who are more successful try harder on defense and then they are better. obviously I'm not saying like that's number one teams, but is that the difference between the teams who are like atrocious on defense and the teams who are bad?
But you're just like, you're obviously are equating more successful with offense, just like in that sentence, right?
It would mean obvious, like they lead hand in hand one to the other of being more successful on offense. You need to be more successful on defense as well. But I'm curious if it's just like a little bit of success and a little bit of confidence in your team then causes you to try harder on the defensive side, which then makes you an even better team, which sort of catapults you.
Yeah, that's also like classic. We're always like so many teams that like we really think we're like primarily good offensive teams, but are really good because of their defense. Like the Sixers or the Thunder traditionally, like, you know.
The Pacers, the South, like a lot of the teams who are very good are good because of their defense. Like outside of the Warriors, pretty much most other elite teams are elite on the backs of elite defenses. And I would say that might be something, if we're talking about like the correlation between effort and defensive success, like that would be a big, everyone talked about like losing Trevor Ariza and Luka Vamute, but the Rockets, it might just be like they're just not trying as hard as they were last year. They're not as motivated. They're not as healthy. And it's just, those are the kind of things that Harden can do it all on himself, but everyone else is just not as well motivated, not as good.
I think that your calling where you can really make it big is if you can properly explain how to analyze defense and defensive, like who's good on defense and who's not. I think you can really like and like bring defensive analysis to the forefront of NBA analysis. I really think you can be like a revolutionary, the Rapayan of our generation in NBA. Just
invent the Schwaber method.
I really think like when people talk about like inefficiencies in the market, like that's the clear inefficiency in terms of the NBA analysis market.
Defensive stats are terrible.
I want to zoom out a bit on the Kings before we wrap up Kings, because like look, no one likes them and they're boring. But basically, like I was thinking to myself, like, okay, they're good at this A seed. And like obviously the crazy thing and like the crazy quote everyone knows from Divac of like when he said, I believe we are going to be in a better position in 2 years, and we all thought he was crazy, but like he wasn't. But I do wonder like where do you go from here? Like everyone's very encouraged, like, oh wow, they're not a lost franchise, they have their act together. But am I convinced that like this team, like what's its path to, forget about championship level, what's its path to being a 50-win team? And that's what like it struck me. Because like when I look at, I don't know, like I don't, not necessarily any of these guys are going to become all-stars at all.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily have a future all-star on their roster.
Well, De'Aaron Fox is having himself a really good year, and definitely he's only a second year, so he has a lot of promising room for improvement. But other than that, like Buddy Hield is probably in his peak right now, which is a very good, like he's a very good player, but I don't think he's an all-star level.
He's really good. And then,
yeah. And other than that, like you have Bogdanović, who's also probably close to his peak and is also, well, probably farther below all-star level. Like I agree with you. I don't know if they have an all-star player. If I was looking for improvement, I think they have some cap space opening up at some point, though I think they took up a bunch of it with Harrison Barnes now, who also, again, not really an all-star. I think Marvin Bagley might be room for improvement if he's could still continue to improve. I think he started off the season pretty slow, and he's been, I think all the attention is going to Luka, so everyone's not really realizing, but I think he's having an under-the-radar, not good season, but like he could still be a good NBA player. I still think both the Suns and the Kings made massive mistakes in not taking Luka, but that doesn't mean that they can't have positive NBA starters in Magley and Aiden.
Totally.
So that could be something that could help them.
Basically, the thought I was having is like sort of to pull the whole rug under this question is that there's like, if you think about like models of building like your path to goodness, is that if you look at teams that are quote unquote good right now, the majority got there by way of like a kind of like a like natural star. Meaning to say like someone who like linearly developed into a franchise star kind of thing, like be it the Warriors, be it the Nuggets, be it the Thunder, be it the Blazers, be it the Rockets, be it the Jazz, you know, like people who just like came in the league and like, okay, cool, you're all NBA, you know. But I think there's a different model of like, oh, just be kind of good, and like eventually one thing leads to another. And like I was thinking, just like the Raptors and like the Celtics are examples of it. But like at no point were you like, oh wow, they have like their guy, and then they were just like, we're like decent-ish for a few years, and like things improved, and like they're able to move from one thing to another, and like get good players.
Yeah, I could like. There's a quick building of like just get one player, and then there's like a slower like get one piece, add another piece, add another piece, add another piece. But I still think for the Kings, like De'Aaron Fox. It's still early in his career. He could be one of those like franchise-ish level players. Like I don't know if he's going to be as good as those guys. He could be like a franchise-defining player. Like it's still early in his career, and he showed great improvement this year. But if he can continue on that, he could definitely be all-star for sure. Lead his team sort of sustained playoff success.
Sure.
Or sustained playoffs.
Definitely. Basically, the door's open. But I was just saying, it's not like they're on the escalator up to success. That's what I'll
say. Yeah. In closing, Bitsfish, what other related, not necessarily basketball game analysis, but like basketball culture, basketball ideas, life ideas, do you wanna talk about with our listeners as we end our episode?
Ooh. I can't think of anything off the top. Maybe you have one to inspire me.
I have one more. I was talking about this with you before, but I don't know if you've listened to any ESPN podcasts. They have some very strange advertisements. They had ZipRecruiter for a while, which is an advertisement for people who are hiring people. So I'm confused, like how many like managers are listening to like ESPN podcasts every day. But I guess there are like lots of like HR people in charge of hiring who are like listening to ESPN podcasts. That's number one. Number two is they then had a lot of Juul ads, which are specifically about smoking cigarettes pretty much. And I was very confused how like basketball, which is pretty popular with the kids, is advertising for cigarettes and feels good about it.
Good stuff.
Now the latest one is just extremely offensive. It like starts off like, when did we allow men to become so lazy? Like take this new testosterone pill, it'll help you in all sorts of ways. And I'm like, that is offensive and also really sounds dangerous and probably ineffective. Please don't inject yourself with testosterone you got from the ESPN ad. Also, ESPN, stop calling men lazy. That's real sexist and traditional masculine roles that are very dumb. And yeah. Wait, so that's why I don't accept advertisements.
How's calling people lazy sexist?
Sorry, it was saying, when did we allow men to become so lazy? Sort of hearkening back to old ideas about masculinity and how men should be stronger and faster and dominant and you know, hate women and be more powerful and not allow women to be president or anything like that. They didn't say all of those things explicitly, but I think one follows from the other.
That's where it's headed. Okay, very interesting stuff.
We only accept intersectional feminism ads on this podcast.
True that. True freaking that.
Bitsfish, thank you so much for joining us again this week. A week thank to the you. Day since our last great episode that everyone has listened to. Thank you to all of the Torashaga listeners, to all of our listeners, to the process, Danny Abudi.
I want to wish a refuah shlema bikar of mamish to Joel Embiid.
Yes. For a week from now, he might be better already. Shout-outs to all of our listeners. Miss Nancy Wasserman and anyone else.
I genuinely feel that because like I love him and he's such a lovable player and like he really has a potential to be a top 10 player for the next 10 years. So let's get him better, please.
Yeah, that's you never want injuries because I want to have a nice healthy playoffs. We want to see everybody playing at their peak. So let's hope for that and let's hope for a smooth win for the Thunder in the finals.
Amen. Okay. See you later.
See you later. Thank you to all of our listeners. Have a great night.